every month. Please call Mommy Hunterton at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. Mommy Hunterton, the voice for mental health in Hunterton County.
I'm your eyes remain, stop me when I'm passing by.
It's time to visit Pambee's, the newest ice cream shop in town. Pambee's Purely Delicious ice cream, gelato, and sorbet made in Hunterton County from unique blends of natural extracts, herbs, and spices. Created with a rich, creamy texture bursting with flavor. Tickle your palate with exotic flavors such as rose cardamom, hot mango, and ginger lemon. Or satisfy your craving for dark chocolate, pecans, and caramel. Located on Route 31 south of Clinton. Pambee's. Purely delicious.
See, now all my flavors are guaranteed to satisfy.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterton Medical Center. Hunterton Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterton Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterton Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
Breaking news from the USA Radio newsroom this hour. Russia's ambassador to Turkey is dead after he was shot during a targeted attack in the capital city of Ankara. Ambassador Andrei Karlov was shot several times by a lone gunman as he gave a speech at a photo exhibit at an art gallery. The gunman screamed about the situation in Syria and then screamed Allahu Akbar. The gunman has now reportedly been neutralized by security forces. Michelle Obama drawing criticism for an interview that will air tonight with Oprah Winfrey. She says in the interview that the people who voted and supported for Donald Trump take away America's hope.
Now we're feeling what not having hope feels like. You know, hope is necessary. It's a necessary concept.
So far, no surprises reported as the delegates of the Electoral College continue to meet to certify the election. USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Joan London. When I needed to find senior care for my mom, I really struggled to find the right fit until I found an advisor, someone who had been through this before. That's why I recommend A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service. They have experts who will help you ask the right questions and find the right place. Call A Place for Mom today.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 1-800-469-7591. That's 1-800-469-7591.
A Place for Mom has helped over 200,000 families find the right senior care for their parents, from assisted living to independent living, even Alzheimer's care, and have local advisors that can help explain your options at no cost to you.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 1-800-469-7591. That's 1-800-469-7591.
Call today.
New Yorkers marking another milestone in the recovery from 9/11 today. Here's the story.
PATH commuters will now have direct access to the E-Train subway entrance without having to leave the building and go to the street level. The E-Train entrance has been closed since the 9/11 terrorist attacks. This newly built one is on the second floor of the recently opened World Trade Center transportation hub Oculus. The entrance has some original flooring and signs. Scott Pringle, NBC News Radio, New York.
Renewed interest in the word surreal has led Merriam-Webster to proclaim it the word of the year. Surreal, defined as marked by intense, irrational reality of a dream. The word was looked up more frequently in 2016 than previous years. Merriam-Webster pointed to three spikes in lookups in March after the Brussels terror attacks, in July describing Turkey's coup attempt, and the largest spike came after the U.S. election in November. Merriam-Webster says synonyms include unbelievable and fantastic. USA Radio News.
Love sports articles but don't have time to search the web looking for the most compelling stories? Then US Sports Pages is for you. Why spend hours going to multiple sites looking to find sports articles when we can do the work for you? Our producers go through every newspaper in the country and pick out the best sports articles separated by sport, dramatically reducing your prep time. We also include sports and entertainment kicker stories. USSportsPages.com is the only site you'll need to get your sports fix. Check us out today. The daily links at USSportsPages.com.
Details are still light in connection with a police-related shooting in the Phoenix area. Here's Jason Campidonia.
The man was reportedly in the middle of a carjacking when officers showed up and he drove off. The man led police on a short chase before crashing around Chaparral Park near Chaparral and Hayden Roads. The shooting happened about 8 o'clock last night. Investigators say no one got shot during the gun battle, but the suspect does have some injuries and will need to be treated. Right now, officials are only saying that one officer fired his or her weapon. Jason Campidonia, Phoenix.
Police in New York looking for a woman who struck and killed a pedestrian and then fled the scene last night. Here's Sarah Lee Kessler.
The suspect fled the scene after hitting a 39-year-old man just after 4 a.m. at the intersection of Jamaica and Sheffield Avenues in East New York. Police say he was crossing the street when struck and pronounced dead at Brookdale Hospital. Police say a woman was seen speeding from the scene in a black car, possibly a Nissan Maxima with front-end damage. Sarah Lee Kessler, New York.
The bitter cold has been freezing millions of Americans on the way out. Forecasters say temperatures will warm dramatically across the plains and the Midwest. Oklahoma City's weather jumping from near freezing to nearly 50 degrees. Chicago should see highs near 30s after weekend in the teens. The weekend was nothing short of miserable in Iowa, Minnesota, and South Dakota, where record low temperatures were recorded. Get more news and analysis at westernjournalism.com. This is USA Radio News.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
Good afternoon, and the weather today. This afternoon is going to be mostly sunny with a high near 31. North winds around 8 miles per hour. Tonight, it'll be mostly clear with a low around 15. North winds around 5 miles per hour, becoming calm in the evening. Tuesday, be sunny with a high near 37, light and variable winds. Tuesday night, it'll be mostly clear with a low around 20, with light and variable winds. Wednesday, be mostly sunny with a high near 43, with a light west wind. And Wednesday night, it'll be mostly cloudy with a low around 26. Well, I'll tell you, Thursdays, it's a chance of snow showers before 11 a.m., then a chance of rain and snow showers between 11 a.m. and noon, and then rain showers likely afternoon and mostly cloudy with a high near 44, and the chance of precipitation is 60%. Thursday night, a light chance of rain showers before 10 o'clock, then a chance of rain and snow showers between 10 and 1, and then more snow showers after that, after 1, and mostly cloudy with a low around 30. And there's a large chance of precipitation. Welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm your host, Larry Cartwright, and my co-host, Tracy, isn't here today. I don't know why. She's maybe stuck in traffic or something. But this is NAMI's Hour, compliments on 100 County Chamber of Commerce. And NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And there's a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We have no office, no paid staff. We mostly work out of our homes and use our own phones, etc. And we try to help people in various ways, people who have mental health issues or someone in their family who may have mental health issues. And we try to do it in, you know, like I said, various ways. We teach classes. We have a family-to-family class, which is a 12-week course for families who have someone either they know or related to or someone in their family who has a mental health issue. And in the course, we We teach about meds, side effects from meds, what to do, what not to do, what to say, what not to say in certain circumstances. And we also run support groups where families can come and, you know, talk about their problems, and others who have either gone through it or are going through the same thing can, you know, trade ideas back and forth and, you know, hopefully get the person through it. We are totally free. Everything we do is free of charge. There is no cost or anything like that. If you have any questions or want to reach out and, you know, want to find out more about NAMI and Hunterdon, you can call us at 908-284-0500. That's 908-284-0500. Today, we are very privileged to have with us Malik Johnston, and he is an electrical apprentice. Right? You're still an apprentice?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And we met a while ago at the Educational Services Commission when I was giving a presentation with Alicia, and we talked, and Malik was part of the class, and we were talking during and after the class. And so it's great that you can come on the show. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Would you mind giving us a little history about your background and, you know, that sort of thing so we can...
Okay. You mean trade-wise, what I do for a living?
Or how you got into the educational services, or, you know, is there any mental health issues in your thing, and, you know...
Yes, yeah, so I have a diagnosis for anxiety and panic disorder.
Okay.
Which is funny to me because I'm going on the radio to talk about it, and I normally don't talk about it to friends, you know, mm-hmm. people who are close to me.
Right.
You don't want anybody looking at you differently.
No,
you
know? That's
you
true.
You don't want anybody treating you differently, you know. You want understanding, but you don't want sympathy, you know. So for me, I was originally diagnosed around 2007.
Okay.
So I wasn't, I was quote unquote normal until then.
Well, you're still normal.
Yeah. Yeah. I try my best to be.
We all try. Trust me, there's no no right way, wrong way. You know, it's all the way it is, you know.
Yeah. So I originally went to Richard Hall and got a diagnosis.
Okay.
You know, you go to different places and you're really not sure what you're there, what you're looking for, who's the right therapist for you. It can be a challenge. You know, a lot of things that they talk to you. First, when you first get the diagnosis, you have to be willing to accept it.
Right.
You know, because when I first got mine, I was like, there's no way. You know, I've gotten misdiagnosed. I've been misdiagnosed with bipolar. And then, you know, it came around to anxiety with the panic disorder. And for some reason, I was more comfortable with that diagnosis than bipolar because at least there's a light at the end of the tunnel. You can gradually get better. You can... it can affect you less and less if, you know, if you're practicing what you need to be doing to get better.
But by the same token, all mental illnesses, you can live a life.
Yes.
You know.
It's just hard.
During our class, we showed, a screen with all these famous people.
Yes. And I took a picture of that screen.
Yeah. Well, one of the famous people that just amazes me is the astronaut. Now his name went right out of my head.
Is that Neil Armstrong? No.
No, I can't think of it. But he walked on a moon, and he was like the second astronaut to go up in space and stuff like that. And he suffers from major depression,
mm-hmm.
you know. And Winston Churchill carried England on his back for 7 years. He was major depression, you know.
And people are surprised, I think, you know, when it was a famous celebrity, mm-hmm. Wayne Brady.
Right.
You know, one of the most smiling people you know. You know, and for him to step out there and acknowledge that he's dealt with major depression, that's inspiring. You know, yeah. It gives people some hope, you know, to say, well, I can keep trying. You know, I can push.
The thing is, too, that if it was cancer or diabetes, you wouldn't have to worry about trying to be, quote unquote, normal. You know, because it's an illness. Well, mental illness is an illness too. Your brain is an organ. It can get sick like your liver, your heart, your lungs, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it just amazes me, you know. And you look at Demi Lovato.
Right.
She came out a couple of years back now. But she is a major spokesperson for NAMI. She goes to national conferences and speaks. She speaks out whenever she can about it. And, you know, it's I think it's awesome that people like that. Bruce Springsteen came out and said he had depression.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean.
You need that. Yeah.
You know, yeah. And not only that, because it helps break the stigma that's attached
right.
to it.
Right.
You know, and like I said, if it was diabetes or heart disease or something like that,
right.
you know.
I think people are relying on their eyes too much, you know, and they're saying that if you have something, I should be able to see it. They're looking for severely impacted people, you know, who may have a more a tougher, I don't want to say tougher, they're all tough, but just something that's more challenging,
mm-hmm.
you know, that has extra right. challenges. You know, once you get your diagnosis, then you're talking about trying the right medication, which
is a process.
Let
me ask you something before we go to medications. How long prior to being diagnosed did you have this? That it came, you know.
I think I became symptomatic around 2006.
Okay.
And I reached out to a couple of therapists, and, you know, they weren't sure. You know, it was like, well, we'll have you come back in and do a couple of more conversations, and we'll see. You know, I was suffering from a broken heart at the time. And which can mimic some
sure.
symptoms.
Right.
You know, so it made it, I think at that time, it made it extremely hard for them to get an accurate diagnosis.
Right.
And then once you get the right diagnosis, you got to accept it. For me, I had to accept it. I didn't want to accept it. You know, you think in your mind it's better to be an alcoholic than to have a mental illness, you know, because just look at the word, like mental illness, and what's the other words that we use to describe it, you know? It needs a softer, less,
yeah.
you know. I'm sorry.
No, it's just, but, you know, the point is, too, that a lot of times it's hard to diagnose someone because the symptoms that they may have may overlap into certain other illnesses.
Yes.
You know, that's why when we talk to people, we tell them to go and get a physical.
Okay.
Complete physical first.
Okay.
Because a lot of medical, quote unquote, illnesses have the same symptoms as some of the mental illnesses do.
Okay.
And should rule that out before, you know. So a lot of times it's hard for, you know, if you just walk into or get an appointment with a therapist or something and say, you know, what's the matter with me? You know, they may not know, and they may have a hard time finding it out
right.
because of that. Right. Because, you know, first of all, there's a lot of, like I said, medical problems that can overlap and have the same symptoms.
Yes.
And, you know, and it's the same thing with trying. Yeah, I hear people all the time talk to me about how they can't find the right medication for their son or daughter or loved one or themselves or whoever.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, because aspirin may work for you, but yep. may not work for me.
You got it.
You know, you may not have anything, any problem with it, and I may have all sorts of problems, you know, with it. So it's the same thing with any other kind of medication.
Yep.
You know, ibuprofen may work for you and not for me, or me for not for you, you know. So it's tough to find, you know, a combination.
Yeah.
It took my son, I want to say about 8 years, on and off all these different kind of medications before they found one that worked for his psychosis.
Yeah.
That had to work in term with his medication for his epilepsy.
Okay.
Because he was epileptic, or is epileptic, since he's five.
Okay.
So consequently, they had to join, you know, they had to work with each other.
Right.
And that was the big problem in a lot of them prior to finding this one medication for his psychosis, because
mm-hmm.
he's paranoid schizophrenic. And, you know, so consequently, it took a long time, you know, but right. now that they did, it's, you know.
I would say when you're, I call it getting the perfect cocktail.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically right. what you're looking for, you know, to get all the benefit. That's a long process. It's a process that starts with them having, and that, by them I mean that particular therapist. I've seen enough to know that they all have their personal preference of their drug to go to as their go-to, and then if that doesn't work, then they start working down a list.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start that, you're talking a three-month period.
At least,
you know. And you're talking in that frame when they start you on these medications and no major decisions. You know, you can't make any major decisions. You have to almost, as much as possible, be to yourself as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know what I mean? For me, I'm very sensitive internally as far as when something goes in my body. Usually, I felt it after a nap. You know, I would take something, they would say, hey, it's going to take you 5 days to feel this. I would take it, take a nap, wake up, I could tell the difference, you know. And that was just for me, but so many of these things, so they give you the medication, you're trying it out, and you're noticing symptoms, negative symptoms. And, you know, even when you go and talk to them and say, hey, you know, this doesn't feel right to me. It's giving me some symptoms that, you know, do we have something else? I think that they're too much by the rule book. They're not allowing you the opportunity as an individual to say, hey, I felt these things, you know, can we try something different? Can we start mm-hmm. weaning off of this and start going in it? It's always that three-month period. So for me, it felt like a longer, drawn-out process than what it could have been, you know, because some stuff, the first night, you know, I slept and woke up in the morning, and I was like, no. It feels like I'm shaking inside of my body, you know. So, you know, you go back to that, and you're talking to them, and, you know, it's a difficult process because you have to educate yourself
sure.
as well.
Sure.
You know, I found the hardest thing is finding the right therapist for you. You know, I think it goes just like it goes with medication. You know, this therapist might work perfect for this person, but you are your own unique individual, and it has to be some sort of chemistry and a trust that can be built. You know, that trust has to be built. And I think one of my complaints about going to these organizations and getting treatment is that oftentimes you may be dealing with one person who's your, say, therapist, but they go and talk in a circle of colleagues about your case, but they don't include you in it, you know.
Mm.
And that right there just is one of those things that I don't think anybody does it on purpose. But it makes you feel less than. You feel like you're getting direction from them and you're not involved in the process. Because if you feel like you're involved in it, then you feel more empowered. You know, you feel more empowered to take charge of it, to be accountable. You know, but when you're just being told this and you're feeling not connected with them, it makes it that much harder because I'm dealing with my depression. I don't want to get up. I don't want to take this medication because I don't like the way it makes me feel. I haven't left the house yet. It's 12 o'clock, you know?
Right.
It kind of start from there. Sometimes it's the smallest things. It's the smallest things, you know. I think people think that when you have a mental illness, you being able to see certain things is askew. It's if I go to your organization to get therapy and I can hear you talking to your colleagues about me, you know, in a way that's less than positive or less than constructive, you know, people hear this.
Right.
You know, it's been plenty of times we've left a group and all of us in the group went outside to have a cigarette or something. And we're like, yeah, we can see what they're doing. We know what's going on, you know, and it kills the therapy. You know, it kills a trust,
Well, that's the thing. You have to build a trust with the person, whether it's a psychiatrist, whether it's a therapist, whether it's, you know, a social worker, whoever. You have to, to build a trust.
Yes.
And sometimes that's not so easy to do, you know.
Right.
And I'm not putting a blame on them either. I mean,
because
their
workload, you never know what their workload is.
You never know what their workload is. They're shorthanded. They may have more cases than they can handle possibly in a week, let alone a month. And, you know, so it's,
I agree. It's difficult on both ends.
It is. It is. What are some of the problems you encountered finding a therapist that works for you?
I'm going to be honest.
I hope so.
I mean, you could say the social thing, whatever, but for me, the challenges has been as a black male finding a therapist, and just as a male, period, that the industry is basically dominated by women, and not that that's a negative thing. I just think that it can be hard to communicate some things that you just are passed through, maybe non-verbally, understanding. Maybe the type of person you're dealing with. Those have been challenges for me because I've gotten to a point where I'm like, all right, I'm tired of dealing with all these women and I want to deal with a man, who can, because I feel like they're trying to soften me up and demasculate me, I'm like, but I'm a man, and if I walk around expressing all these feelings, people going to look at me like I'm crazy, So I'm like, I need a man, and, it's just a different dynamic to it, but then again, it all goes into each person, their personality,
right?
Are they open-minded, closed-minded? Are they specifically there just to do their job, or are they there trying to do more, or really trying to help people?
Right.
Those are the ones that make a big difference in people's lives. Those who are not there just for the paycheck, they're there and when they get involved with you, you can feel their energy. You can feel, some of their pain. They're dealing with somebody else, and they're aware. Their awareness is high, It seems like the more I learn about my mental illness, it's very hard to explain to people, because they think they know me. But I'm like, you don't know me. You know my disease. What you think is my normal, genuine reaction is my disease first. And then me, if I can get to that point to actually speak and let it come from me.
Right.
Usually it's my disease, it's my anxiety speaking first. The second you ask me a question, boom, I have to answer. There's no relax, take a deep breath, think about the question. It's constant, and
you can think about the questions I ask. You don't have to. but no, you had brought up, having done this for, let's say, close to 20 years. Every race, regardless of what is, sees mental health in a different light.
Mm.
And do you think that mental health in the African American community is treated different or seen as different than other?
I think that it's harder for people to genuinely see the disease in black males because of bias. I think people initially have a thought process of when a person does something, what they're thinking when they do it. And if you have a bias and it's a negative bias or even a positive bias, you think that first before you think of the person. In the black community, it is not spoken of, genuinely speaking. And let me just say, for in my experience, it has not been spoken of. It has been something to look down upon, that you are weak, that you got to be stronger than that. You got to toughen up. You got to man up. You know, everybody goes through something. It will pass.
Yeah. That's people without.
You're just crazy.
No,
you know?
That's people without knowledge of what it is speaking. Right. Okay. Right. And believe me, that doesn't only hold true to the African-American community.
Really?
That holds true to Hispanic, Caucasian. I don't care what it is.
Right.
Okay. I can't tell you how many people over the years in classes I've taught, in support groups that I've run, where people say, oh, the father looks at it this way and the mother looks at it that way. Mm-hmm. The father is, like you said, get over it. Get out of bed. Go get a job. Quit feeling sorry for yourself. Yada, yada. The mother, on the other hand, doesn't quite know what's going on, but it's her son or her daughter or whatever. And she's more like, I always figure mothers are like female bears, mama bears. They hug the kids close and they want to. Right. You know, like the mother bear hugs the cubs closer to it. Well, that's, you know, moms. And I think that you'll find that in just about every race on earth, you know. And it's unfortunate. Because if they realized it's not that the person didn't want to go get a job or get up or go out or do this or do that. It's that at that point in time, they're physically unable to,
right?
And mentally unable to,
right?
And you
get people pushing you and pushing you. Go get a job; it'll make you feel better. You'll be better. You'll be better. And they're rushing you out there, and they're doing more harm than good. Because
exactly.
You go into that environment, you're not prepared. You know what I mean? You're
exactly.
not ready to deal with the things that are going to occur.
Right.
And everything that happens is more traumatic because you're not, I guess, in a calm state.
Right.
You
exactly.
know? And God forbid you should get fired. You got to deal with that on top of. So that's going to knock your self-esteem down. You know, it just amplifies. That's what, you know, it will amplify. And every negative experience you have, because I've run out there.
Mm-hmm.
I've run out there not prepared for a job, gotten a job, you know, and the whole time having panic attacks. You know, 3 panic attacks that day. Really don't know what's going on. You know, just really drawing blanks. What did he just tell me to do? Got to go back and ask him. Now he's looking at me like I'm an idiot. You know, he's seeing me sweating profusely. It's coming pouring down. He's like, what is wrong with this guy?
Right.
You know,
right.
Nobody's thinking, you know, he's having a panic attack. It all they see, what you see. You
right.
know, you go by what you see and you're like, I'm giving this guy direction. Then all of a sudden, a faucet just came on. You know, is he crazy? You know, this is, I think it's a normal reaction when you don't know, but it's very difficult to explain to people, you know, without them. You want understanding, but you don't want anybody's sympathy. You know, you want understanding. Yeah, but I don't want you feeling sorry for me, you know, because I'm fighting it, you know, and I'm fighting it every day. I think I'm one of a few that tries to turn my anxiety on its head. And because if I sit there and I let it, the fear will build and it will spread to other areas and it will just get worse and worse and worse. And I've had it to the point I don't want to go nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to go outside. I don't want to deal with nothing. I can't. And then to come from all of that, so I'm constantly pushing. Being here is pushing myself, you know, to put myself out there on a different platform. I've never talked about mental health on my Facebook page, but because I felt like if you don't hear me when I'm talking, it's going to be so hard for you to understand just by the words that I use. And God forbid I use the wrong word. And, you know, people are, you know, you have a completely different take on what I was trying to say. So I was a little bit more comfortable saying, you know what, if I'm going to go out here, I'm going out here to say, hey, you know, it's not, in my experience, talked about in the black community where it looked at as weak. And I'm far from that. I'm actually strong because I fight this. I'm actually strong because I get the help that I need. Being weak would be me staying to myself, suffering and getting worse and worse and worse, you know. And with these type of illnesses, generally speaking, people do more harm to them, to themselves, than to others. You know, even though it's out there as propaganda that a person with a mental illness, you immediately think they could do some harm to me. They might be a threat to me. You know, you hear bipolar or schizophrenic. These people are not more likely to do more harm to you. They're more likely to harm themselves.
They're more likely to be a victim than the perpetrator of a crime.
But that's not what's out there. You know what I mean?
No, I agree. That's not out there. Look at the newspapers. Right. What do you hear?
Right.
You know, so-and-so shot all these people. Oh, he has mental illness, you know.
For example, you know, one of the things that I did was we had put together a game plan because I stayed at an Easter Seals residence for about 2 years.
Okay. And my son did, too.
So I'm there, and, you know, every 3 months or every 6 months, you have to put together a plan.
On treatment. Right.
So one of the goals was, you know, we didn't know how I was going to respond to a work environment. So we already knew that I used to do volunteer work in the past. So we thought, you know what, maybe start there. You know, maybe start volunteering. You're going to have interaction with people. You're going to have some good experiences, some not so good. And you get to see how you respond, you know. And to see and challenge yourself every day, okay, I made this mistake yesterday, I won't make this one today, to go out there and do things that I'm unaccustomed to doing. So they had me, so I'm volunteering with United Way, great organization, Family Success Center, great organization, and Tabby's Place. And Tabby's Place was very therapeutic.
What's Tabby's Place?
Tabby's Place is a cat sanctuary.
Oh, okay. That's what it sounded like, but I wasn't sure, you know. I'm trying to realize. I know all the other ones you said, but with Tabby's Place, I, you know.
Yeah. They're awesome. Great group of people there. And it's along the lines of people saying animals is therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So I got there. I really was afraid of all the cats. Like, I was scared, you know, but gradually people that were really in love with the cats started bringing me around, introducing me, you know, and it did start to have an effect. It did have a calming effect.
Sure.
Volunteering did help me. It's so many days I didn't want to get out of bed early on my first year volunteering with United Way. If it had not been for them, there was this lady, Amy, and she would call me in the morning. Hey, you want to come volunteer with us today? And just because I wanted to make her happy, that got me out of the bed.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it was things like that. And when she would, you know, show me different things, you know, she would give me space and time to learn how to do the job. And she was just really awesome. You know, and I would go in there and I would have panic attacks, you know, and sometimes I could leave. Sometimes I could go in the bathroom, and then sometimes they just pat me on my shoulders. You're okay. You're cool. You're safe. You know, it's all good.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And it helped. You know, I thought I was 100% ready when I jumped into my electrical field. But it's a big jump. I encountered things I didn't think I would encounter. I immediately, when I got to work, if somebody asked me something that I was unfamiliar with or if I forgot, I immediately start drawing blanks, panic. Poof. You know, it's happening two or three times a day at work, and people are looking at me going, what is he on? Is he on drugs? What's going on? You know, people are looking at me, you know, and it gets so embarrassing, you know. And so, you know, I took a step back and said, okay. I jumped out there. I tried to do it by myself. Now I need to come back and get some more help, you know. So I went over to Pathways, and I'm working with them now. as a job coach.
Pathways for Employment?
Yeah, for job as a job coach. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to see because I've done it my way. You know what I mean? And I've made progress, but it was painful progress because every place I got fired from. But I did learn, you know what I mean? So I might have lasted a month at the first job, but what I learned there, I applied to the second job. So I was a little bit more comfortable, still having panic attacks, but just not as much. So now I'm making a little bit more progress. I let go, get with this company, you know, and so it's like we want to make sure that I'm at a place for a good amount of time, you know. The more I can relax, the better the electrician I am.
Sure. Absolutely.
All day. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so it's trying to get to that point. So it's a mixture for me. It's some exercise. This is outside of the therapy for me. I need to do yoga. You have a Life in Balance here in Flemington. You have and meditation. You know, I do these things. You know, I might have saw them on a sheet of paper, but it was nothing that a therapist recommended. You just get so desperate that you just start trying other things, either for a sense of relief, you know, or just to get better. So trying those things, doing that, helped me physically relax a little bit.
Right.
You know, and then it's just the battle in my head. You know, to me, I akin it to a person with chronic pain. It's always there. It's just at what level, you know? It's always there. I have some days where my levels are really low, you know, and I can almost be like, I feel like me today.
Yeah.
You know, you had one of those days, and then you had other days, and you're like, man, these, you know, my reactions to what people are saying to me is poor reactions, and I'm just dropping the ball. I'm saying the wrong things, and it's just, you know, it can go bad.
Right.
You know, and you got to be able to bounce back from it. I haven't found that line where you can tell some people and, you know, and then they not treat you differently. You know, I think that when I tell somebody, genuinely speaking, out of empathy, they, you know, or sympathy, I'm sorry, they start to treat you a little kinder, you know, a little kinder, a little bit more gentler. And that's not really what, you know,
you know, I think people, if they would understand that the illness is not the person, okay, and to see the person for who he or she is and not the illness,
yes.
You know, like I used before, you know, diabetes or cancer or whatever, you know, it would be a person with an illness.
Right.
Mental illness is the same thing, that they should see the person. And, you know, there are bad people. I'm sorry. There are really bad people with mental illness. I'm not disputing that.
Right.
But 99 9/10% of them are good people. Right. And I don't care what race or color or creed they're from. It doesn't matter. Because if you stop and think that, on an average, it's 1 in 4 people in the world, not this country, not New Jersey, the world affected by mental illness. That's a hell of a lot of people.
You're walking around a ton of people that are undiagnosed and don't even know it.
That's right. Or they have someone in their family. I can't tell you how many times you'll be talking, all of a sudden say, oh, yeah, my uncle. Oh, yeah, my aunt. Oh, yeah, my sister has this or my father had that. And, you know, you stop and think it's there.
Right.
You know, and I think that what you said about volunteering first, I got my son, I told you, he's paranoid schizophrenic, and I got him, a little pressure, but I got him to volunteer at the hospital.
Okay.
Because I volunteer at the hospital.
Yep.
And at the time, he volunteered 4 days a week there. But it, like you said, it gave him a reason to get up in the morning.
Yes.
It gave him a reason to get dressed, to shower, to go out and go there, you know. And he knew most of the people there because he spent time in the day program there. He spent time at 2 Central, which is the ward up on the second floor.
Mm-hmm.
He was in and out of there more times than they care to remember. They all knew him up there too, you know. And so like he passed one of the psychiatrists in the hall and, "Hi, Mark, how are you?" You know, blah, blah, blah. You know, and you know, they all knew him. Yeah. So I figured that was a good place for him to go and start.
A lot of it has to do with insurance. You know what I mean? You got to get good insurance if you want some options on getting to some different therapists. You know?
Yeah.
If you just have Medicaid, your options are severely limited.
They are, because a lot of therapists or psychiatrists don't take Medicare or Medicaid.
Right.
And a lot of them, you know, in this county, with the population in this county, they figure they should have around 34 psychiatrists. Actively, they have 9. So consequently, you stop and think of all the people that are going to day program, that are going to the hospital, that are going to, you know, psychiatrists and stuff, that a lot of them can't take more patients. They're so booked now that they can't take any more. And then a lot of them don't take Medicare or Medicaid.
Right.
Or they don't take insurance, period.
Right.
You know, which is a problem.
Yep.
You know, and it's, you know, it's sad because there's got to be a better way to handle it. And I don't know. I don't have the answer, obviously, but there has to be some way we can get through to the vast population, and have them look at a person for the person and not that they're, I've got a touch of color blindness. Does that make me different because, okay, I can't see maybe reds and blues? What difference does it make? You know,
right.
I'm still me. I'm who I am. Mm-hmm. I say what I say. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, I should keep my mouth shut, but, that's me, you know. And it's always been me, and it'll always be me. People say something, I'll say, well, don't ask me if you don't want an honest answer.
Right.
Because I will not fabricate it in any way, shape, or form. And you know me enough to know that. We have a listener here that's sitting in. It's Lauren Feliciano. And in February, hopefully, she's going to do a Mental Health Matters radio show in Spanish. So she's just taking in notes. But it's true. I am the way I am, and I'm not going to change, and that's it, you know.
Right.
And it's just a shame that people don't accept that it's an illness.
Right.
And, you know, you didn't ask for it. My son didn't ask for it, you know.
There's a sense of shame that comes with even accepting that you have one, you know. You could know something's amiss, but not want to go get help because – You don't want
right.
to know.
Right.
You know, and then there's that shame. So, and that takes some time to, for everybody, is a different time frame.
Right.
You know, for me, it took quite some time before I was even willing to acknowledge it, that it was a real thing, you know, and that it was affecting me. And then you run across people that don't believe anything's wrong with you.
Yeah.
Because they go, oh, well, you're articulate. I was just talking to you. Ain't nothing wrong with you. And only thing I think sometimes I say to myself, I say, I think the smarter you are, the worse your anxiety is because you're considering stuff nobody else would consider. You know
right.
what I mean? Because you're thinking of other things. You can't win with those people. I found out the hard way.
Then you just go on, you know? And you just say, all right, forget it.
If it's in the streets, you can walk away. If they're in a position of power, they can hurt you, though.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. I understand that. But, by the same token, I think where you're with your employment pathways.
Mm-hmm.
I had a blank spot for a minute. Couldn't think of the pathways. I knew employment, but I couldn't think of pathways.
Kim Schneider.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Yep. She knows my son very well.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. He goes to her.
Look, that was her only advice to me. Don't say nothing stupid.
you wouldn't say anything stupid. We'd shut the mic off. You know? But, you know, it's sad because, you know, people with a mental health problem, they need help.
Indeed.
All right?
Indeed.
I mean, yeah, down the road they may be able to do it on their own, and you know, but in the beginning and the first quite a few months and years, they need help.
Yes.
And they can't find someone to help them.
Right.
So what happens? They crash again.
And
you
have to be willing to accept the help.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's – yeah, that goes too. You have to be willing to accept it. You have to be a point in your life where you accept it.
Yes.
But – and then they crash again. It's like a revolving door, you know. And it's sad, you know, because they should have help.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be hard to find a cancer doctor or somebody to handle, you know. My son, the one we're talking about, my youngest son, broke his ankle Saturday on the ice. Walked out of his apartment, went down the steps, and boom, fell on the ice. Broke his ankle. Right? Now, you just stop and think. If you see my son with his crutches hobbling along, oh, boy, what a shame. Yeah, that's a pity. He's got, you know, look at that. He's hurt, you know. You say, oh, gee, you know, my son does this, this, and this, or has this, this. You know, and everybody steps back, you know. Whoa, you know. Yeah. But if you knew my son, he's the most docile person you ever want to meet. You know, he's polite. He's, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't hurt a fly. And, you know, to hear, you know, it's just, you want to choke some people, you know. You really do, you know.
I know that I spent a good amount of time addressing my depression because, for me, some of it was seasonal.
Mm-hmm.
And especially around the holidays.
Which is normal.
You know, right?
Well, yeah, it is.
So.
Right.
Through volunteering, I was able to literally, year by year, get better.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my first Christmas, I volunteered with United Way. Working with them helped me. I was still depressed, but I wasn't as depressed.
Right.
Because when they shut down, I think like the 20th, there was still like two or three churches that were around that needed people, you know. So you go do that. Not that first year, I still was extremely depressed. The second year, still depressed, just not as bad. Noticing marked differences year by year.
Mm-hmm.
So this Christmas has been the first Christmas in over 20 years that I've actually look forward to, you know.
Good for
I have
you.
My kids, you know. I have custody of three mm-hmm. of my children.
How many children you have?
I have four children. Three of them I have custody of.
Okay.
I
have four too.
I still struggle. You know what I mean? I still struggle. My kids catch some things before I do sometimes mm-hmm. because you know I've been at this a while, so I have certain parameters in place that if I do something extremely far to the left,
right,
that's my warning sign,
right?
You know what I mean?
Well,
okay,
absolutely.
I need to be paying attention. This, you know, this is a miss. Let two days go by. My daughter say, "Daddy, did you take a shower?" You know, because they see the soap bars. Everybody's separate
right,
one is
right,
there,
right? Right.
But I guess they check mine. And I'm like, no, I didn't. Let me go take one now. You know, not that they saying I stink, but that they notice.
Right.
You know,
right.
Just having them around, you know, it challenges me. You know,
yep.
I'm constantly challenged, you know, constantly challenged, you know. You know, little things I was going through recently, maybe wearing the same clothes 2 or 3 days, you know. Those things, if they go unchecked, they just get worse
yep,
and worse,
worse
and worse.
Right.
You know, I have to, you know, acknowledge it, then start to take a step in the other direction. That might mean that night ironing some pants or a shirt, you know, for the next day so that it's ready to go. Because when I know if I got to struggle with certain things in the morning, I won't do that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I won't do it.
Right.
Then
right.
I'm just going to put this on. I wore it yesterday, so what? You know, so seeing those sort of symptoms, you know, and being able to know that it's a warning sign.
Right.
That's been key for me, for just for myself, for being on top of it, you know. I still got a long ways to go, you know.
You know, we all do. Ask my wife. She'll tell you how far away, what a long way I've got to go. And we've been together since 1960. Yeah. You know. So, you know. But it's just, you know, we're each individuals. And, you know, they say opposites attract.
Right.
Well, we're so opposite that we had to attract. We're like different worlds, you know. But, you know, what you had said before about exercise and meditation and stuff. All right, I don't know much about meditation. I had somebody on the radio that does meditation, that teaches it, and
yes.
You know, stuff. So I know a little bit about it. But exercise, I agree with you.
Yes.
I think exercise, my son, if he can't get to the gym, he'll take a long walk. He'll walk up Main Street and back down Main Street, and, you know, that sort of thing. Or he'll walk up by the Getting Together Center. Or sometimes he'll walk to work. He works at BJ's, and he'll work. Sometimes he'll walk from Broad Street to BJ's. Which to me is like a mile and a half, and that's a long walk, you know, when you're lugging a backpack and everything. So, but it does, but he does hit a gym where I go to also, and, I think that helps.
Yeah.
You know, it helps me, and I.
It helps running together.
Right.
You know?
Right. And it helps me because I just use my frustrations there or work out my frustrations there.
If I can get up in the morning, do my meditation and do my yoga, I feel like before I walk out the door, I'm much more prepared, you know.
Okay.
So even if I have a panic attack, I feel like I have more control over it. I've had ones go for 20 minutes, you know, and you're sitting there sweating profusely, you know, all underarms, it's embarrassing, you know.
Right.
But if I'm on top of that before I walk out the house, then if I have it, it feels less. It feels like 10 minutes, you know.
Okay.
Or, you know, if I'm having one when I'm driving, you know, then I can be more conscious. It's easier for me to focus and do a deep breathing exercise, which is going to aid me in reducing the length of the panic attack.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, you know, some days I we got good days and bad days, you know. And on the bad days, you be like, man, I can't fight this fight my whole life. But on good days, you say, hey, I remember worse of days.
Yep.
You know.
But that's everybody, though. That's everybody. We have good days. We have bad days.
Yeah.
You know, we have days we'd like to forget. We have days we'd like to relive.
Yeah.
But we have about a minute, maybe 2 minutes tops left. Is there anything that we haven't covered that you'd like to cover? Or did I do a good job?
I think you did a great job.
I'm only kidding. You did all the work, not me.
You know, I would just say to people who do listen, you know, if you work in that field, you know, your work matters. You know, the people that you're dealing with matters. And please try to educate the ones that are surrounding the people with the illness. So you're treating that person, but please, if there's any way that you can get to the people that are around them in their closest circle and get them pertinent information, it matters. It helps.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, sometimes you got to go above and beyond for some people.
That's right.
You know,
That's right.
But the reward is wonderful because you see somebody do better.
Right.
I'm excited because as I grow, I'll be able to talk. I want to get on the Mental Health Advisory Committee. That's been one of my goals. So I've been trying.
The Mental Health Board?
Yeah.
That's what I'm on.
I'm trying to get there because they don't have anybody who has a mental illness and who can talk
themselves. They do have a mental health board, yeah.
But do they have anybody on there who has a mental health illness?
That's what I'm saying. They do.
They do?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I thought they didn't.
No.
Nah, I tried this last year. I tried that.
There's two people that I know of. One is my good best friend.
Okay.
All right. And he has mental health issues, has for the last 25 years. Takes medication, sees a therapist or a psychiatrist, and is a CEO of a large corporation.
See?
Okay.
Right.
There's another young lady who just got married. And in fact, the two of them give in her own voice presentations where they talk about their mental illness and their recovery and so on and so forth.
Really?
Yeah. So, and she's just got married and she's works and she has mental health issues.
Okay.
So there was at least two, and I think a third one, but I'm not positive about the third woman.
I would love to be part of that process, because to me it would feel like
talk to Kathy Zahn. She's the one that's in charge.
Okay.
Call Kathy Zahn.
Okay.
I can give you her number after. Yeah, we've got to run, Malik.
Yes.
Johnson, I appreciate your being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Being vocal and being outspoken about your issues.
Yes.
Is a great help to people, believe me. If one person heard it and got something out of it, it was well worth it.